Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Simply Shantae with me, Jaleesa Shantae. We do have a special guest here with us today, a very versatile creative from music production to podcasting, as well as the founder and CEO of Balancing Act Music and Media, LLC, from Brooklyn Park, Maryland, Mr. AJ Throwback. So happy to have you here with us today.
Hey, hey.
How you doing?
It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on. This is an honor to be on one of my favorite podcasts.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. So starting off, can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing in Washington, D.C. and how it influenced your musical journey?
So like you said, I'm originally from Washington, D.C. Mainly grew up, for anybody who knows D.C. in the Ward 8 section of DC, Southeast, far Southwest. Really but growing up in the DC area, period, I feel like really shaped my musical taste. Whether you're talking, of course, go-go music, I mean, that's heavy in the DC area, you know what I'm saying? All, of course, but really for me, my main foundation other than go-go is R&B music. Mm-hmm. Like I grew up in an era in the late 80s, really all throughout the 90s, where like R&B music, like if you can make it, get your music played on stations in DC, or if you got it played on BET during the 80s, during the 90s, and we rock with it, then a lot of times, like all across the nation, they would kind of follow suit, because you have to realize like DC being the home of the original Quiet Storm, like Slow Jam and Quiet Storm formats. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of that stuff got started right here in DC. So for me as a musician and as an artist, even though I ended up in hip hop, a lot of that foundation in terms of how I produce music and melodies and all of that, that comes from like my R&B background.
And who were some of your biggest musical influences when you were growing up?
So in terms of producers, my biggest influences growing up were L.A.M. Babyface, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, Teddy Riley. And then like some of the lesser known producers. I mean, people who know their producers know these producers. But like I also think about producers like Barry Eastman and Paul Lawrence and Kashif. A lot of people do know who Kashif is, but, you know, not everybody, you know, knows who Kashif is, because, you know, it's a little bit before a lot of folks' time, but like those are the people that I really came up on that really like influenced my sound and my style and, you know, how I really just kind of sort of receive music and whatnot. And then like the artists, you know, I grew up, of course, like early 80s, late 80s, 80s. New Edition was like probably like my band, like in terms of, well, my group, like my favorite group when I was a kid. Like you throwing New Edition, like you had my attention, and not just them as a group, but then even the solo stuff that they ended up doing. So they were like one of my favorite groups. Luther Vandross, one of my favorite singers of all time. Eventually Phyllis Hyman, also another one of my favorite singers of all time. Like these are a lot of the people, like I listen to a lot of their music to get ideas, to get inspiration, and really just kind of sort of drive how I receive music, process music, and then eventually we'll create music.
So how did you transition from like R&B songwriting and production into like the hip hop era? How did you make that transition? What made you?
So for me, it was kind of easy because I'm not really a singer. So I was like, okay, well, if I'm not like a huge singer, I needed an avenue for me to express myself. So, you know, other than production, because I can express myself through production. And I feel like in a lot of ways, I can say a lot without saying anything at all. Mm-hmm. But I still a lot of times had a lot of words and I had a lot of thoughts in my mind. And, you know, it was kind of difficult for me as somebody who was not like, I think now in this era, like the quote unquote nerds and geeks and, you know, like that whole little stereotype, however you want to put it, like a lot of the weirdos, if you will, a lot of us, like we didn't have those lanes all the time to really just kind of sort of just speak up and get noticed and feel like a lot of times we could get our voices heard. So a lot of times what we ended up doing was we translated into poetry. So for me, my start was poetry before rap. Nice. And so I did poetry for probably like a good 2 years before I even wrote my first rhyme. And so eventually it was like that natural transition from poetry to rap, because all, you know, rap is like the acronym is rhythm and poetry. So it was just a matter of putting the poetry to rhythm and, you know, just really kind of sort of developing my own flow and studying beats. Like that was a huge thing for me over time. Like it took me a while to kind of sort of get to that groove, because a lot of times I would just write. But then I, you know, I would be around other artists and I started learning the art of not just writing rhymes, but learning how to flow and really riding the beat. And so like it was really just that transition from, okay, yeah, I could do poetry, but I could do poetry to beats. And so for me, also my style, because I like the hard drums of hip hop, but I like the melodies of R&B. It was just that marriage of the two, because I mean, R&B and hip hop are always like so closely related. So for me, it was just a matter of just making it all make sense for my particular brand, but also being able to express myself in my own unique way.
I think you explained that so perfectly. Like that just makes so much sense. So throughout your career, you have worn many hats: producer, artist, radio host, journalist. Is there one role that you find the most fulfilling?
Production.
Production.
That's actually pretty easy for me to answer. Like there are a lot of different, everything gives me something different. Like to rap, I'm able to say what's on my mind and say it to rhythm. For when I interview people, that's an opportunity for me to get to know something about somebody and do it in a way that not everybody else is going to do it. I'm not always going to ask the questions that everybody else is going to ask, because my thing is, it's like, I want to be able to pull out new information for my community so that they can receive it in a way that it's like, okay, even the person that's giving the information, they'll feel like, dang, I've never been asked that question before. I've never been asked that question like that before, you know? So that gives me something. Being able to create content is just a way to just, you know, if I'm feeling creative in a visual way, I'm able to create that content. Graphic arts, like there have been, you know, I've done like lyric videos, and that gives me the opportunity to be able to put what I've done put a visual to it and then put the words to it and do it in a creative way. But when it comes to production, it really speaks a little bit more to my personality. I'm the type of person, I tend to stay out the way. And even though production is like, I'm still there. And I know you can relate to that for sure. You know, like it allows me to say what's on my heart, what's in my soul, what's on my mind, without using words. And that it provides the biggest challenge for me, because to be able to get across a certain emotion, to be able to get across certain thoughts without speaking one word is not as, I mean, for a lot of people, it's not easy. So that's always the challenge for me, to be able to say, okay, how can I use this particular sound to say this, to convey this particular emotion? And it just allows me to be creative in a way that a lot of the other things that I'm able to do that I've been, you know, blessed by God to do, I just don't do it in the same way as I do with production. And it's the one thing that I feel like it brings me the most peace, when I can just sit in my studio and be at my keyboard, be at my drum machine, and just put together notes in a way that's just like, ooh, that is beautiful. You know what I'm saying? Like, to be able to have that moment, I can get that when I write a really dope bar, or I can get that when I have a really good interview with somebody, but it just hits different when I'm able to do it through production.
So from production, what made you want to start doing podcasting as well? How did you make that transition?
Well, that really comes from my radio background, because when I was in college, I had my own, it wasn't just me, it was a couple of my folks. Shout out to my homie Country. He was the one that really pulled me into radio professionally. And so, you know, I did a slow jam show for 4 years in college, And then I tried to have my own show. Like I actually pitched a show to a couple of radio stations in the DC area. Nobody bit because my father once told me like the radio industry is very cutthroat. So fast forward, probably I say about 16 years later, one of my friends that I did music with, shout out my homie Ransom Relic, he pulled me into this show called Breakout Kings. And so I was really a co-host, but because of my experience in radio, because of my experience in journalism as well, I was able to kind of sort of pull a lot of those things together and kind of sort of be like the support for that show, being able to be a liaison for a lot of the artists and a lot of guests that would come on the show, coordinate a lot of the music that we would get for the show, kind of sort of curate a lot of those playlists. And once I did that and I had that time on that show, then it was like, okay, well, I kind of want to do my own thing because I have an idea for something that I want to do. And I feel like this is going to just be a little bit different than what I've done before. And then it'd be something that's my own because all of the other shows that I'd been on was somebody else's baby. So it was right. Like, okay, mm-hmm. I need my own baby. You know what I'm saying? I need to birth something right. else that like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like I had to birth something that really, it just encompassed who I was and what I wanted to do mm-hmm. as a podcast or as a radio show. So the Balancing Act radio show was born. That ran from 2018 to 2021. And when I say that show just had such a huge impact that I was hoping it would have, but when I look back on it and when I still run into people to this day who say like they had one of their best interviews on bars or I played their music mm-hmm. on bars. You being one of those people
yes,
when
me.
I had the, you know what I'm saying? When I had the Independence Avenue Drive at 5, like mm-hmm. TMS was in constant rotation on that joint.
Thank you
know
for
what I'm
that.
Saying?
I and appreciate that too.
That, absolutely. I appreciate you for, you know, being gracious enough to allow me to play your music on my show. Because, I mean, that's another huge thing. Like, it was important for me to build relationships
right.
through mm-hmm. podcasts. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, I could have these shows. And yes, I could you know, have people talk about their journeys and their experiences and everything. But for me, it's the lasting relationships that I've been able to build through those podcasts. And I think that was one of the biggest things in terms of wanting to do podcasting was community, building the ecosystem, adding something to the ecosystem.
And with you being, you know, involved with different radio shows and podcasts, I know you're doing, what is it? I Am Podcast Pro now. Do you see yourself
yes, I'm a
continuing?
Podcast pro, yep.
You see yourself continuing with podcasting?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has been more of my focus, though, with the I'm a Podcast Pro. And shout out to my sister, Marion Swingler, for, you know, being my partner when it comes to doing that whole venture, because mm-hmm. it was something that I was originally going to do on my own. But because Marion had a specific type of energy and experience with doing her own podcast, Confident You Podcast, it just when I talked to her about it, it just really made sense for us to do it together because with me having more experience and her not having as much experience, but her being so like really just adept at podcasting, it was just that balance of two people who have different experience levels, but who mm-hmm. who really share the same passion for really helping people to improve their brand. Like, so for me at this point, yeah, I could have my own podcast, but it's more important for me to help other people who are interested in having podcasts for them to get stronger at it. Because one of the things that I notice a lot of times with podcasts and with radio shows and with a lot of media ventures is that everybody does a lot of the same things mm-hmm. and nobody is willing to really just kind of sort of have their own identity as a show. Or they're just trying to figure out like, okay, how do I get started? You know, what right. do I do? What do I talk about? You know, what equipment do I need? Do mm-hmm. I need a whole bunch of money? Like, do I need a whole bunch of followers? Like, a lot of times the hardest part is for people to start.
Start, yeah.
And so for me, yeah. So for me, the whole thing is, it's like, I would rather be in a position to help other people strengthen their brand. And, you know, if I really come up with another hardcore podcast down the line, sure. But I'm just in a period where it's more important for me to help other people strengthen what they do best and help them to pull out their God-given abilities and do it. Because a lot of people are talented enough and have the vision to do it. It's just they just need somebody to kind of sort of put that battery in their back. And so that's really where I'm at right now. And that's really who I've always been, is I'm the type that puts the battery in people's back. And I don't have to have a platform and able to do it. If I want to support somebody's music, I don't need a podcast to be able to support somebody's music or play somebody's music. Like, I can literally play it on my Apple Music or whatever, or buy their music on Bandcamp, right, whatever it might be, share their music on my platforms, you know, what I might have. I don't need a platform in order to do it. But having the platform, it makes it just a little bit more public. And I don't know, it just hits different when people know that you got a platform, you playing their music on your platform, or you have a platform and people feel like, hey, I can come on your platform and talk about my new project, or I can come on my platform and share my thoughts about this, or we can have a conversation about that, whatever it might be. So one of these days, I think I'm going to like really build something along the lines of like bars, because people are always asking for me to bring it back. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll see, you know, time will tell.
And with your podcast, you had The Love on Rewind, where you were paying homage to 80s and 90s R&B. What really inspired you to create that project? And you did have me on there, too. And thank you for that as well. See, that networking gets you far when you be networking with other creative individuals. So I appreciate that. That's too. Right. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, like my thing is, like, knowing your experience and what I appreciated about having you on the podcast was that you gave, and really with everybody that I had on there, everybody gave a different perspective. Nobody had the same exact perspective as another person. So to like be able to talk to you about like a lot of the artists that you were into, whether it was R&B, whether it was rap, you know, whether it's trap, you know what I'm saying? I know you into the trap and stuff like that. And I'm with you on that, because it's like a lot of the artists you was named was like, I rock with them too. Mm-hmm. But also just kind of sort of drawing those correlations between like all of these different things. I mean, if you really think about a lot of trap artists, a lot of them listen to R&B. You know, mm-hmm. they came up on R&B. Mm-hmm.
Some of the samples be R&B.
So it might not know. Exactly. So like it all somehow like intersects, and that's really right. what I wanted to show with that with that whole experience with that podcast. But like just thinking about the Love on Rewind album itself, like that was like really driven by that Video Soul era of R&B. Like that's what I came up on. Like I watched Video Soul heavily when I was like 8, 9, 10, 11 years old.
Right.
Like, I mean, I stayed glued to the TV watching BET. Like when BET was really, really good.
When it wasn't really BET.
Because everybody knows it was a specific era of BET. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that was the time.
I think it was like 106 in Park for me when I was growing
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And even I was in the 106 in Park because that came out when I was in college. But like because they had like the Freestyle Fridays and, you know, like how the crowds would just get so hyped for the guests that would come on the show. Like, I mean, I feel like Bow Wow just shut down 106 in Park. He was Mr. 106 in Park. But I mean, but even that era of BET was like really, really good. Like, and that's the type of stuff that I was into. But even like not considering BET, but like the radio stations that I was listening to. The Box, you know what I'm saying? Anybody that know about The Box, like, I mean, you dial a number, call up a number, like put in 3 digits and, you know, a few minutes later or an hour later, 2 hours later, depending on what the backlog was, your video that you was waiting all that time for would play. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the era that I came from when like music was a had to have type of thing. Not this thing where it's like you play it and you forget about it, or you play it and it's like, okay, cool, on to the next. Like, you really sat with music. Like, that's the era that I came from. And so really, when it came down to bring back the love conversations, that's really what it was all about. Getting back to that era of where you sat with the music a whole lot more, where you invested in relationships a whole lot more. Not just romantic relationships, your friendships, your relationships with family, because I mean, so much music like really brings family together, really brings friendships together. You have all of these memories that are connected to music, You know, so that's really what that whole project was all about. Like when it comes to bringing back the love or rewinding the love, it's like rewinding to those times where you really just appreciated everything that just surrounded the music.
And you had time to listen to it before they dropped another project with streaming. They dropped stuff so fast, you don't have as much time as it used to sit on an album and let it marinate and everything. So.
Yeah.
Times have changed.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's good, you know, but stuff's different now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, it is. It's funny that you said that because I immediately thought about somebody put on Threads today. They had said something to the effect of, I was gonna listen to the Tyler the Creator album again. And then Kendrick was like, hold on.
Drop something else.
Right, exactly. Like a surprise album that nobody was expecting. Right. And now got the whole internet on a chokehold, you know?
Exactly. Look, was he dissing Lil Wayne? Everybody is talking about it. I'm like, dang, that's crazy. That is crazy.
It's crazy because it's like, is it a diss or was it like really just kind of sort of him expressing his disappointment or feeling like his complex feelings about how Lil Wayne reacted to the fact that Kendrick was performing in the Super Bowl in New Orleans and he wasn't, you know? So, you know, it's a lot of layers there. So, but I don't know, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the beauty of music. It's up to, it's really interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So you juggle a lot of hats. You also are a judge for Friday Night Fights. What qualities do you look for with up-and-coming artists?
Well, so Friday Night Fights, just for clarity's sake. So with that whole situation, and that was a show that we did I was a guest host on for a while. Guest judge for a while. And with that show, it was really just kind of sort of shout out to DJ Shane. He would always like find two artists, whether they were just like completely different or had similarities between each other. Like, it was one where it was like Gerald LaVert versus Johnny Gill. And then it was another one where it was, I think it was Scarface versus Bun B. Like it could be hip hop, it could be R&B, but like he would just find these two artists that they could be similar or they could be completely different. And a lot of times it was just like, okay, he would put, you know, it was really like the whole versus kind of sort of thing. And yeah, but like the way he curated it, I wish that he would have curated verses for a lot of those artists, because sometimes the way that they would roll out some of their lists, I'm like, I don't know if I would have put that song up against that song. But Shane, whenever he curated like lists, it's like, yeah, he always picked the right song up against another song. And it really made it difficult to pick a lot of times, you know what I'm saying? So like that was just a really fun thing, because a lot of times it's like going back down memory lane, but also like, okay, you know, you say you love this song. How much do you love this song versus this song? But in terms of what I look for in terms of up and coming artists, it depends, because I like a lot of different music. I don't just like, you know, one type of music. Like, you know, as much as I love music that speaks to me, I like ratchet stuff too. You know what I'm saying? So for me, say if I'm looking for, if I like the ratchet music, it's like, okay, can you give me a little bit of range if a lot of what you do is ratchet? You know, like, can you give me that one song that is like, okay, you talking on that one, but then you give me the bop that I'm looking for. You give me that one that's like, it's catchy, it's got a dope beat or whatever. It's like, okay, yeah, you sliding on that one. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But then I also look at, say, the more conscious artists or artists who like a lot of their platform, they have something to say. It's like, okay, I don't necessarily need you to do the trap stuff, but can you do something that gives me some energy? Can you give me something that's like, it's going to make me get up? Like if I'm in the gym, it's going to make me do a couple more reps. Mm-hmm, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, or like you said, like a nice vibe. If I'm in the car, and can it pass the car test? Because really for me, with any artist, I don't care if you independent, I don't care if you major, can it pass the car test? Like, am I going to run this album multiple times in the car? You know, or can I run this song multiple times in the car? So for me, the biggest thing, like the short answer, is replay value. Does your song, does your album have replay value? And there's no one way to do it. There's no just surefire format in terms of somebody getting my attention. It just has to be something that really speaks to me, you know, or that's something that I can relate to, or just something that just slaps, you know.
I know, that's right. That's why sometimes, like, I like to listen to the same song over and over and over. So I'll be so happy when I'm riding by myself, because I'll play that song about like 10 times. I'll be like, dang, I'm already at my destination. But if you like it, then you like it. Got that replay value.
Mm-hmm.